Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A more upbeat day for House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy. He has gained some support in his run for speaker.
It just reminds me of what my father always told me. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And now we have to finish for the American public.
14 Republican holdouts have switched their votes, but CBS's Scott McFarland reports.
Kevin McCarthy and his negotiators, his allies in his conference, will have to do some talking with those other six members. But a couple of them, especially Matt Gaetz of Florida and Bob Good of Virginia, have been unequivocal in saying they will not vote for Kevin McCarthy.
After two rounds of voting, lawmakers chose to adjourn until 10 Eastern tonight. Californians catch their breath as one storm system moves out. But as CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson reports,
for California, the hits just keep on coming. Three more atmospheric river storms over the next week or so. That would bring your total to five since basically the beginning of the year. And these next ones will continue to be problems, not just because of the rain that they're dropping, but because it's on top of ground that is fully saturated and on top of rivers that are already running fuller than they normally do.
The L.A. Dodgers say Trevor Bauer is no longer part of the organization. They've cut ties with the pitcher, whose unprecedented 324-game suspension over sexual misconduct allegations was reduced 2 weeks ago, allowing him to resume his career with the start of the new season. Bauer says he did nothing wrong. Buffalo Bills safety DeMar Hamlin is making progress, now breathing on his own and speaking. CBS's Steve Futterman.
For the first time since he collapsed on the field, DeMar Hamlin, via FaceTime, spoke to his teammates. Buffalo Bills offensive lineman Deion Dawkins says the team was overwhelmed.
It's still very emotional for a lot of guys, and we're happy. We're blessed and extremely thankful.
With the decision not to resume the Bills game against the Cincinnati Bengals, there could be some adjustments in the postseason regarding game locations. The AFC Championship game could be played at a neutral site. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
State Department spokesman Ned Price says the U.S. is not necessarily buying claims of an Orthodox Christmas ceasefire by Russia in its war on Ukraine.
We believe that our skepticism is warranted because of what we've seen from Russia over the course of this conflict.
The predominantly black city of Jackson, Mississippi, is getting some $800 million in federal money to start upgrading the city's long-troubled water system. Ongoing water problems are having a huge impact on Tracy Smith's barbershop.
It's becoming an economical strain. It really is. I mean, you know, but I know how to improvise. I know how to make things work, but I'm tired.
Stocks rally on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Republicans in the Wisconsin State Senate say they're close to supporting legalizing medical marijuana. Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu tells the Journal Sentinel the bill could pass if marijuana is only prescribed for people in serious pain. That's the first time the top Senate Republican shown support for the idea. The Marquette University Law School poll says 80% of people in Wisconsin supported medical marijuana in 2019. It's someone's lucky day in Luck, Wisconsin. That's where someone bought a $15 million Megabucks ticket. Luck is a tiny village just up the road from St. Croix Falls. The lucky winner has 6 months to claim their prize. In sports, the Bucks host Charlotte tonight. Tomorrow afternoon, Wisconsin plays Illinois and Marquette takes on Georgetown. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We have a full hour with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley.
Yes, thank you for having me. So glad to be in studio.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
You know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whether you are a union member or a business owner, picking up your garbage has no partisan lines. Making sure people can get to and from work shouldn't have partisan lines.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
Podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. 2 years ago today, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember sitting here 2 years ago to this minute going, can you believe what we saw? Can you believe the people who told us that they love America, people that carried the Constitution in their pocket, waved the flag? Can you believe that those are the folks who were stabbing police officers with flagpoles? Can you believe that these are the people who love America? Can you believe that these are the people who are carrying the Confederate flag through the halls of our Congress? These people who ransacked our Capitol in the goal to overthrow and overturn an election. Can you believe it? And here's the thing. Now, today the president held an event, gave out presidential citizen medals to about a dozen recipients, saying, look, you know, our democracy held. We the people did not flinch. You know, that stuff. You know, we stood up to this. And in my mind, I'm looking at this and I'm going, remember the good old days when a terrorist attack, a major crisis, a national disaster, a national trauma. Remember when that used to pull people together? Oh, welcome to the brave new world. Welcome to MAGA world. Because today you had a moment of silence at the Capitol, which is kind of the right thing to do. People died. People were injured. Lives were changed forever. And yet, just one side showed up. Democrats showed up to hold the moment of silence to commemorate January 6th, 2 years ago today. What happened? And in Washington speak, it was bipartisan. There was one Republican who showed up, Brian Fitzpatrick, the guy from Philadelphia, who was being floated as the consensus Speaker of the House for a moment. He showed up. The only one. He told ABC News, "There's a lot of terrible emotions, a terrible day that we can never let happen again." Only one Republican said that. Where are the people who are going, no, we can't have political violence? Where are the people on the right saying we need to tap down this kind of extremism, this kind of anger, instead of, you know, taking out our? And we hear this nonsense on the extreme right often. Well, we can't get our way at the ballot box. We're going to get it at the bullet box. Well, your ideas are horrible. And look, you look at what's going on right now in the House of Representatives as you're watching dysfunction happen. You're watching Republican governance happen. You're watching what's going to be. This is a precursor for the next 2 years. every single battle is going to be this. And I've had some people say, well, that's how it should be. But on this day, I can't help but remember, the flagpoles, with the American flag on it being jabbed into police officers, the beatings, the bloodshed, the racism just being screamed in the streets, all by the people who claim to be the ones who stand up for law enforcement. It's kind of an interesting bit. Now, today you had McCarthy go down for the 13th time. He is now, it's been, 160 years since this has happened before. So congratulations, Kevin, you're now historic. They'll reconvene at 10 o'clock here on Friday. I understand McCarthy is going to eventually be speaker because he's giving everything away. There's going to be nothing left to give away. And I was reading through some of the concessions that he's agreed to. And you got to love when Matt Gaetz goes, the speaker's been pretty thorough and we're kind of running out of things to ask for. I guess that's the amazing part in this. But the fact that any one member can call for a motion to vacate the chair, which means just basically fire the speaker at any moment, is kind of like setting up a filibuster in the House like you have in the Senate. Any one member can stop anything from happening. So you have people, and I love the analogy that Bill Scheer used yesterday. These are people who want to shoot the hostage. This is that. McCarthy's also agreed that his PAC won't do anything in open primaries in safe districts. He's not going to try and influence how radical the right goes. You're going to hold key conservative votes on bills that they want, border security, congressional term limits, their agenda, and good, they should do that. The big thing, though, the one they want, the gold coin, is the debt ceiling. They want to use this as that hostage tool. And we've never defaulted on our debt, ever. It's not happened. And nobody knows what happens when you push the button. And these are the kids who go, oh no, we got to push the button. They're just fixated on pushing the button. What would happen? What would happen if we defaulted on our payments? What would the rest of the world do if we went bankrupt? And we decided, we're not paying for anything anymore. Because again, the cruelty is the point with these people. And I keep saying, and I've had a bunch of people reach out and say, no, Rick, we need a functional government. Yeah, we do. But we also need to see right out in front of us in big ways how dysfunctional the Republican Party has become. Look, I want them to be functional. I want them to push an agenda. I want them to sit down and hammer out legislation that's hopefully going to make people's lives better. I know it's not going to happen because I know they're void of any values. They're void of any direction to help working people make their lives better. Because time after time, when given the opportunity, what have they done? They've enriched the very wealthy. They've loosened restrictions on corporations and the powerful to beat down working class people. This is going to be no different. And again, it's just one of these moments where I had this conversation last night with a conservative who was telling me that what these 20 are doing is they're fighting for smaller government. And I wholly disagree. And to be honest, I have no idea what the blank he was talking about. In fact, he doesn't even know what he was talking about, because every time I said, okay, walk me through this, because I'm not for small or big government for that matter. I'm for effective government. I want government to do the things that we, the people, need them and want them to do. And I say that as the things that we individually can't do, we do collectively through our government. That's the reason we come together and we do this thing. I want effective government. I want every dollar that I send to Washington or to Harrisburg or to any of the places where we send our tax dollars to use it efficiently and for the common good, for the betterment of we the people. So every time I said, okay, let's do away with this, he would say, no, let's do away with that. He'd say, no, we can't. No, no, we need that. And it just became this, okay, well, what do you get away with? What do you? Well, then it became, you know, the poor programs and the social safety net. And I'm going, so you're willing to let people die on the street corners? And the answer is, well, no. And it was this weird kind of moment. So when I saw Republican Congressman French Hill hold up a blank piece of paper on the House floor and say that that piece of paper signified every one of his constituents that wrote him to tell him to cut spending. Because evidently he's arguing, and this was a weird argument he was making. He's arguing that none of his constituents really want to cut spending. Much like my conservative friend who really didn't know what to cut. Just knew the talking point because he's been told, we got to cut spending. Okay, where? Who? What? What are your priorities? What are your values? Budgets are moral documents. Where's your morality? Show me. Tell me. They can't. And it's one of these weird kind of places where I go, you know, there are moments where clarity comes through. And Congressman French Hill was there. None of his constituents want him to cut spending. They want him to use the money better for targeted things that are going to help working people, I would guess. But it's interesting to me to hear their rhetoric and what we the people actually want. So the question I come back to, are you getting what you wanted out of the Republicans in Congress right now? 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Want to hear your thoughts. I'm assuming that McCarthy has the votes, that this evening he will eventually become Speaker. Maybe they're going to try and twist a little bit more out of him, keep him, you know, swinging in the wind a little bit till tomorrow or early next week. But I think he's going to get the votes. I think he's going to be Speaker. And I want, as I've said a number of times, I want that for him. I do. I want Kevin McCarthy to be Speaker. I want those 20 people to be the first thing he thinks about when he wakes up. I want that those 20 people to be the thing he thinks about when he opens the office door. I want those 20 people to think about when he sits down behind his desks and figures out why he's not getting anything done. I want those 20 people to be on his mind as he's got heartburn, trying to figure out why it's burning so badly because he can't get any peace. And when he goes to bed at night and closes his eyes, he sees those 20 people attacking him. I want that for him. I do. And evidently he wants that for himself. So this is one of those things. I'm hoping he gets what he wants. I want people to be happy. I want them to get what they want. And clearly Kevin McCarthy, having given everything away. wants to be Speaker. Now, here's an interesting little thing. And before we go to break, I want to throw this thought out there. All of these concessions, and maybe this is the fly in the ointment, maybe Matt Gaetz is listening, and maybe the Republicans who have already flipped over, maybe they'll hear this. I got to ask the question, what happens if you agree you make him Speaker, and when they go to vote on the House rules, they say, we don't want these rules. And then all of these things that he's agreed to, well, don't happen. Just curious. And it wouldn't be him doing it. It would be, you know, a couple of Republicans saying, no, we can't live by these rules. We don't want to set up a debt ceiling hostage situation where we know we're going to shoot the hostage. I'm curious how that would play out. It's going to be interesting. The intrigue. Going to be fun. Want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
If
you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, our conservative Supreme Court, again, you know, I said the Republicans don't have an agenda. Oh, they kind of do. And it's screwing you and me. Our conservative Supreme Court's about to put workers and their unions back in their place again. Because Tuesday, mark it on your calendar, Tuesday, January 11th, the Supreme Court is going to hear the Glacier Northwest Incorporated versus International Brotherhood of Teamsters Local Union 174 case. And you go, you know, what's that? This is quite novel, quite a novel concept here. This is a company suing the union for the union going on strike. Here's the story. And we talked about this last year when it went on. These cement workers, more than 40 of these cement workers went on strike. Now, when they went on strike, they went to work in the morning. They said, hey, we're going to go on strike. They went on strike. They left their trucks running so that, you know, the cement trucks could keep moving and the cement in the trucks could keep, you know, not creating cement. So they kept it running, which gave the companies time to get the cement out and, you know, do something with it. Because had they let it dry in the truck, well, it would have ruined the cement one, but also would have ruined the truck because you would have had that, you know, in there. They didn't do that. They didn't damage the equipment. They said, look, we told you we're going on strike. You didn't do anything to prepare for it. That's your fault. Well, the company's like, well, you owe us for the cement. You owe us for all of the costs that we had to go through because you went on strike and you didn't do your job. Now, understand, you know, the right to strike is something that in this country we still a little bit believe is a right. And this kind of stuff has been happening for a long time. The fact that the employer did not have a contingency plan, the fact that they weren't at the bargaining table saying, hey, let's negotiate through this and making plans for if it happened is quite remarkable to me. And I guess, you know, shows that they weren't taking their workers seriously. So when these workers, you know, went on strike, here were these trucks running with the cement inside and the management people who probably don't even know how to put the trucks in gear. Probably don't even know how to start them. Fortunately, they were already running, but probably don't have no idea how to put them in gear, let alone how to empty the cement out. We're stuck with running trucks with cement rolling around in the back. It cost them a little bit of money. So they have now filed a suit. They went and tried to sue the union. This is now gone to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's going to hear this. Now, the weird thing is, this is one of those weird things. It's never been allowed before. Companies haven't been able to go to state courts or local courts. Federal law preempts all that. Haven't been able to sue because of this, because it's been understood that this is part of that process. If the Supreme Court allows an employer to sue workers and their unions in a state court because of what the company's lost due to a strike, would that not just make strikes almost impossible? Now, the argument is, as well, the cement was perishable. And they knew, because they came in the morning and they didn't deliver the cement. They could have delivered the cement and struck after they did our work. isn't that kind of the point? To withhold your labor? To say, look, we want to sit down and negotiate. We want better wages, hours, conditions. We want a fair share of the wealth that our labor creates. And whether it's convenient for you or not, we're going to withhold that labor. If you take that away and say it's only you're only allowed to strike when it's convenient for the employer, doesn't that kind of diminish the ability to strike and that? And if this is the case, if the case is that it could be injurious to the companies, couldn't this open up, I mean, couldn't this be something that, that any person who goes on strike could be sued over? And the answer is yes, and that's the idea. The idea is to make this so costly that workers don't do it. It's not enough that they're going to lose their wages. It's not enough that they're going to lose their health care and pension contributions, that they're going to put their family finances on the line and risk their jobs. That's not enough. We want to add on top of that the ability to be sued for future damages down the road. And we now have a Republican Supreme Court who I fear thinking those working people, they're getting a little uppity, getting a little big in the britches, going to need a good swift kick in the behind. I'm fearing that they allow this. But they tailor it in a way that, you know, if it's perishable goods, you know, if it's, you know, something like the cement in the truck, then you can sue for the cement in the truck and the costs that go along with that. Then you can do that. And then it opens it up to, you know, what industries do you go next? Can you not, you know, on Super Bowl Sunday, will the Domino's and Pizza Hut and will those workers ever be able to strike? No, of course not. Because, hey, there were a lot of pizzas that were supposed to be delivered. Amazon, Walmart, Black Friday. Will those workers ever be allowed to strike again? No, because they bought extra groceries. Could be injurious. But here's the other part of this. It's not even about the awards from the courts that they win or lose. It's about making labor spin their wheels. It's about spending money on legal fees, on spending time in court, on defending themselves instead of being out there organizing. This isn't as much about, you know, holding them, getting the $800 for the cement in the back of the truck, as it is about tying them up in court for years, making it, you know, legal fees incredibly expensive for unions. This is something the right has been masterful at. And this is where, again, I have people go, you know, I don't understand why you're not a Republican, man. I don't understand why you support the Democrats. This is my issue. The labor side of this is where I find things to be most important. How we bring this country together, how we fix things, how we have a better country is by getting more prosperity into the working class. I had this conversation with my son the other morning. We were having breakfast and I said, you know, the sad reality is, you know, when I started in the job I do now, you know, 30 some years ago, I was making X amount of dollars an hour. And in today's dollars adjusted for inflation, it would be like $45 an hour. And I'm like, you know, where's the other $18 an hour that I should be making? Well, it's been sucked up by the investor class. It's been sucked up by CEOs. It's been sucked up by the wealthy. And why has it been taken away? Well, because the strength of organized labor has diminished. When I started in the less than truckload trucking industry, it was 85% unionized. It's down to less than 10%. Down to less than 10%. That bargaining power is gone. And when you tell people, you know, the reality is you know, back in the days when we had 25% union density, back when we had 35% union density, wages for workers were much higher. The standard of living for working people, much higher. So when I say, you know, this is where my mindset is, it's this kind of stuff. So when Donald Trump was running for president and said, I like right to work, I'm going to appoint justices who are going to ram Janus down your throat. I'm against that. Everything Republicans have done in my lifetime has been to strangle the ability of workers to organize, to collectively bargain. political ideologies aside, this is about putting food on your table. This is about putting a roof over your kid's head. This is about the opportunities of the future, health security, retirement security. That's what it's about. The sad reality is, I fear the Supreme Court goes along with this. And what's that going to bring us?
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. GOP House Leader Kevin McCarthy is closer to becoming Speaker, gaining several votes from conservative holdouts, but not enough to clinch it.
How are we all going to work together? It's new for us, one, being in the majority, but being in a tight majority. I think at the end of the day, we're going to be more effective, more efficient, and definitely government's going to be more accountable.
The House reconvenes at 10 p.m. Eastern. California is in for more storms this weekend. CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson.
The other portion of this storm, the ferocious winds along the Sierra Crest. You could be seeing winds gusting to 120 miles an hour in portions of Tahoe down towards Mammoth.
Police in Newport News, Virginia, say a teacher is in critical condition after being shot by a six-year-old student inside the elementary school. Police Chief Steve Drew.
We did not have an individual that was going around the school firing off rounds. We have an isolated location where the shooting occurred. There will be more to follow about that. We do have the individual in custody.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Mantner with your headlines. Have you gotten your flu shot yet? Public health officials say with this year's aggressive flu season already underway, it's still not too late to get vaccinated. And with hospitals dealing with a triple burden of flu, COVID-19, and respiratory illness, RSV, it's essential people get their flu shots. After more than 4 years, a federal agency found a Superior refinery's lack of safeguards during a maintenance shutdown led to an explosion in 2018 that injured 36 workers and caused thousands of residents to temporarily evacuate, the blast causing roughly $550 million in damage to the plant. Now the Chemical Safety Board issuing 16 safety recommendations for the refinery, federal agencies, and the industry. Eagle River's popular ice caves won't happen this year. The Chamber of Commerce says conditions just aren't suitable. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates.
Mitch McConnell did make a public statement, right? After he voted to acquit.
No, nothing says the president can't be prosecuted.
Set the example for your caucus.
Convince your caucus as to why the man is not fit to serve. How do you not use your leadership to say, you guys, this is crazy. We can't do this, and here is exactly why. Because now of the two major political parties, one of them is under the thumb of a fascist insurrectionist.
Follow The Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Cardall put out these weird, sad videos interviewing incapacitated elders in their nursing homes that don't have the ability to say, don't use me as your political prop.
If they are what you say they are, then you shouldn't be doing it how you did it.
Yes, it was the kids using the parents as props.
Well, my old man hasn't talked since 76. Of course he would have voted for Trump.
That's the evidence. Videos. People that can't talk.
It is wrong. So it's absolutely wrong.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
You care for the house, the kids, and our future. A Shiro's day is never done. So let's start saving a little more now. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings. Visit aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
To put blinders on young people's natural curiosity.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I don't know about you, but my email box has been getting slammed the last couple of days with Republicans begging for money. Yes, I am on all of their email lists, and I do this. I do this so you don't have to. The reality is all of the anti-McCarthy folks are out there saying, no, you see, we're standing up for you. Send us money. Matt Gaetz was the most interesting. While he's saying, maybe I might vote for him. You know, he's giving us everything we want. He's listening thoroughly. We don't have much left to ask for. He sent me an email saying that, you know, he's proud to be standing against McCarthy because McCarthy's soulless. He said he's a proud Florida man. He said, if you want to drain the swamp, you cannot put the biggest alligator in charge of the exercise. And he goes on with all the blather that you expect. And then, oh, by the way, give me money. And this is the thing. It's all of this stuff is performative. All of this stuff is about making their star bigger and getting them more attention and, of course, more money. And shame on the idiot who would send this guy a dollar. Shame on you. Here to share some thoughts on the Florida man and what's going on in Congress. I've asked my good friend David Yankovich to come talk with us. David is a senior Democratic strategist. I got to get some of his thoughts on this. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
I am good. So what do you think of this? I mean, I thought lucky 13 was going to be McCarthy's number. Maybe 14 later. Maybe he sold off his children. Thoughts?
Well, first, Matt Gaetz, I'm surprised, isn't in jail for sex trafficking, right? Isn't he under investigation?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I keep going. Yeah, please, get to it already.
I can't take him seriously even before all that happened. But he's like the most inconsequential person in the Republican Party. Like even Marjorie Taylor Greene and all of them like have more stock than he does. He's just a joke.
Yeah, but here's the thing, David, and this is the weird thing. McCarthy is agreeing to a situation where even Gaetz at any point can vacate the speaker and stop everything. McCarthy is selling the soul to give people like Gaetz, people like Greene, people like Boebert, the ability to blow everything up at the drop of a hat.
Well, first, McCarthy sold the soul a long time ago. Well, I mean, remember, you know, I have a little bit more to say on this because I ran against Paul Ryan, right? And remember
that one of the young guns.
Yeah, one of the young guns. But you know, there was that meeting where they were talking about Russia, and McCarthy said, you know, I swear to God, you know, Putin's paying Trump. You know, he's gone from that to this. You know, he's completely powerless. And we talked about this the last time I was on the show. You know, it's he's a stupid person, and everybody can kind of see he's a stupid person. And you know, you're about to be Speaker of the House, and you go into the votes and you don't have the votes done and you're going to just, I mean, like, what the heck have you been doing for the last couple of months here, for the last year? Everybody's been saying that we're going to lose the House and the Republic, like, why hasn't even repairing these relationships beforehand and doing everything? And yeah, I mean, this, if anything shows, I mean, even if he gets Speaker and, you know, at this point right now, it's hit or miss whether he's going to or not, but it shows that he has no power whatsoever in the party. There, he is a, you know, just a leader in name only. You know, there is no true rally behind him. There is like all the real political power is in the minority of the Republican Party now. You know, with what we are, 6 holdouts now, but you know, the 20 that have been holding out and doing that. This really just kind of shows like they can't govern. They can't even govern themselves to get anything done, and it's embarrassing, really. You know, I kind of take the line of like, you know, what Slotkin said and everybody else is like, let's let them figure out who they want to be before we start figuring out, you know, any deals or anything we want to make with them. So because eventually if this keeps going on, they're going to have to come to the Democrats and figure out a consensus candidate. Otherwise, you know, they're going to be stalled, you know, what was it, 100 years ago the same way. So
no, see, I think they're going to get McCarthy in.
I do, too.
I think he's going to get in and I think they're going to get everything they want. And as I've said before, I think what they want is to be able to, at any moment, blow up the House. They want to use the debt ceiling as an opportunity to hold the country hostage, and they want the ability to shoot the hostage anytime they want. To me, the debt ceiling thing is a big deal that I don't know that people are talking enough about.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, a big part of this, too, is, you know, when you have a leader, the leader has to be able to keep at bay the sides of the party that are crazy, whether it's the left or the right. You know, being a speaker, you can't just cave to everybody. and being president, you can, or majority leader or whatever. And I mean, basically, he's so desperate to be speaker that he's willing to give away the farm to do it. And I do agree with you. I think that he's probably going to end up getting it. But then again, I mean, do the five that are there, you know, that are hardliners, you know, the MGTs and, you know, Gates and that, are they going to cross and are they going to do it? I mean, I think you're right. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what it's going to be. It's not just the debt ceiling shutdowns. It's going to be everything that they want to hold up and do. They're going to, you know, and that's the whole playbook. They're chaos agents. That's really, you know, what Trumpism is and what the extreme is. It's just complete chaos. I mean, even like the speaker race in here now, and you know, we haven't seen this for over 100 years. You know, yeah, it's just stalling democracy completely out.
See, this is one of those moments where, you know, there was a part of me, the part that wants good governance, the part of me that believes that, you know, better angels will prevail. This could have been a moment for Republicans to reach across the aisle to Democrats and go, look, this is crazy. We got to get somebody who's going to move us in a direction. Let's put down these 20. Let's move in a different direction. Let's unite around, you know, something else and go in that direction and stop this craziness. We'll make the debt ceiling something that isn't going to be able to hold you hostage over. We'll do some things to move forward. There's part of me that believes that's what should happen. I know it's never going to, but there's still part of me that says that's what should happen.
Yeah, this isn't a TV show, Rick. Yeah, but we're not on the West Wing. You know, this is, you know, it's
no
more
Bartlett.
House of Cards. Yeah, we don't get a Bartlett. You know, like we, yeah, I mean, and we don't have on the OR side either. Like, was Speaker Hafferty who's willing to come in and make a deal with the president and the shutdowns happen? No, that's not the way this goes. They are literally embracing Proud Boys and anti-Semites and, you know, Nazism and all these horrible racist things. And they've gone so far down this road.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they haven't got their asses kicked yet. You know, there hasn't been an election where we had a 49-seat win and we had completely broke their spirit. There hasn't been that generational change like how the Democrats had, you know, before the 60s and how, you know, the Republicans had when they first came in. There hasn't been those types of wins or losses. It's been a stalemate. And that's my criticism with the Democratic Party right now. We're running around acting like we just, you know, got a triple because we were born on third base. You know, like we barely won this last midterm. And the only reason for that is because of the kids and because of women, and, you know, because of Roe v. Wade. Like we as a party didn't save anything. As a matter of fact, it should have been the red wave, you know, for the way that we campaigned in this last cycle and everything else. So like we haven't won. So of course they're not going to start abandoning their positions. They're not going to start changing what they're trying to do or reinventing themselves. Why would they? Yeah. They're getting more and more pickup every single day. Like look at Andrew Tate right now. You know, this guy's a known sex trafficker now and he's been, you know, arrested for it and charged and everything else. And they're rallying around him, you know, and on top of that, like the kids in schools and things like that are rallying around this. This isn't just a national problem. This is like going all the way down to my son's middle school, you know, in these conversations and everything. Like we're not winning the culture war. You know, and that's why you're not seeing these changes, you know, of, you know, the aspirational United States, who we can be, who, you know, better angels of our nature and everything else, because nobody's forcing them to.
And we're not, you know, winning the media. I mean, you know, as much as the right plays the victim, they control the media structure. They completely control the megaphone.
Well, they control the megaphone also because they invest in the megaphone. You know, they're building new megaphones.
Tell me about
either,
it.
Yeah. And on our side of it, we're not. You know, and then we wonder, you know, it's like, I mean, this is what happens, you know, is you have, you know, a senator, right? And just generic senator wants to get the message out. We're just going to do a press release. We might tweet about it. We're just going to basically do a press release type of tweet or post. And that's it. And they rely on the fact that the, you know, press release that the reporter who picks that up or the friendly reporter they call up to ask them to write the story or whatever is going to write it the way that they want it to be done. We forget that these people are in the business to sell newspapers, not be our friends or get the truth out about anything. And then on top of that, they're not coming on shows like yours and talking on, you know, talk radio and grassroots straight to the ground. They're not doing social media and doing peer-to-peer organizing or any of that kind of stuff either. And then we stand around and we're like, oh, we wonder why we, you know, this race is so tight or why the country's 50-50. Like, we shouldn't be celebrating a win when we're literally in a stalemate with Nazism.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's, we're just, in, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And, I mean, you and I have railed about this for years on the show, years in private. And, you know, where we're headed right now is we're going into 2024. This is the hardest sentiment that I've seen in a really long time. It's all of our moderates versus all of their superstars. And, you know, we're not, and I know, and this is what the party will say and what the replies in my DMs and what people text message me, David, we're in stand down. You know, it's January. We're just getting back into it. You know, everything else. The other side's doing this 24/7. We don't, like, they don't take breaks. They don't take stand downs. They don't take 3 month sabbaticals after an election. The reason why I ran for Congress and got into politics and the way I did, it all started because of this. You know, Donald Trump won and it made everybody, every elected official in the Democratic Party sat there for 3 months while people were terrified. You know, like, what's going to happen to us? And not one of them would come out on social media or say anything that's like, I'm going to fight for you or I'm going to do anything like that. Like, we take these sabbaticals. So basically every election cycle and every 2 years, we take a 3 month break. So November to January, you know, mid-January-ish, you know, and then every year. So, I mean, we're basically 6 months out of every 24, we're on a break. On the other side of it, they're going 24/7. They're not stopping. They're investing in digital. They're investing in talk radio. They're buying TV stations. They're buying radio stations. They're building social media platforms. You know, like, they're like, we've let them get ahead of us on every single communications thing. And then we celebrate the fact that we basically got a, you know, 50-49 win against extremism and hatred and the worst of us out there.
Yeah. No, I look at the race in Georgia. You know, between Warnock and Walker, and you go, how is that even a close race? You know, and it's to what you're pointing to. You know, no reasonable person would vote for a candidate like Walker, other than, you know, the way that they had framed it. And I was down there for a couple of weeks during the runoff, and what the media, what the right wing media had spun for them is the response I heard most often, and it was chilling. The response I heard most often was, he'll do what he's told. He's a good one. That was frightening to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that, you know, and that's all across the country. You know, it was the same thing, you know, not in the sense of Walker and, you know, and Warnock, but, you know, in Ohio with Tim Ryan, you know, and talking to the Republicans up there and, you know, like, we never see him, you know, like, we, you know, he's never around. Like, he was just campaigning in the cities. You know, he wasn't coming to my town. He wasn't coming to my area. I didn't see him at any gun shows. I didn't see him at any carnivals or fairs or that kind of stuff. Maybe he did some of that, but that's, you know, not enough. You know, we're just not doing this the right way. How are we going to win the narrative that all Democrats are these horrible, monstrous people if we never show up and talk to people and look them in the eyeball?
No. This is the reason we did the Working Class Heroes radio tour, where we went into these rural communities where a Democrat hadn't been in a long time. And we're talking to people. And when you strip aside the red hat, blue hat stuff, you realize that we've got a lot of the same issues. And I keep saying we got to take the red hats and the blue hats off and get the hard hats back on, because maybe that's where we come together. Because a lot of our wants, our needs are kind of the same.
Well, I mean, pretty much all of them are. It's the politics of it that makes everybody get into it like this. You know, the basic kitchen table issue stuff, it's all the same, whether you're Republican or Democrat, or, you know, what you want for your kids or whatever. It's the same stuff. You know, it's just that the politics of it wedges us against each other. We win on the issues. If you have a blind issue and you just have the message of the Democrat, Republican at a focus group, we win every single time. Yeah. And that's what we delude ourselves into when we're on our campaigns and stuff is, oh, because the focus groups are saying this, or because the polls are saying this, you know, it's right. But, you know, I got to say, like, Richard Nixon had a very prominent and important quote called, you know, about the silent majority. And there is a silent majority of this country that is really freaking tired of all of this bull crap. And I think I can't say the bad word.
Yeah, don't.
Not on this one. You know, but there really is a majority underneath of just anger and frustration. And, you know, and I tell everybody that I know, you know, when they're thinking about running for office or whatever, like, come with me in my hometown in Barberton. You know, if you really want to see what the Midwest and what people are really feeling and what they've gone through and why they're so unapologetically angry, you know, it's go there and see the industries that have died and see all the people who have lost everything. And, you know, and it's like that all across the country. And then, you know, of course, there's always the counter argument. Well, that doesn't outweigh the racism. You know, it doesn't. But there is an anger. you know, and there is a righteous anger, a part of this. I mean, they have been left behind. The Midwest has been, you know, when I was in Wisconsin, I was, you know, running up there and, you know, and, you know, Janesville and, you know, what, you know, Paul Ryan let happen to the factories and stuff there and everything else. But that's the thing is like, so, you know, that happened and then we let it happen. And then the oversight has a better communications message. And so then they get to blame it on us. So not only do they tank it, do they, you know, inflation, gas prices, whatever, you know, but then they turn around and they blame us like it's our fault that they, because they're basically kicking a chair out from underneath the people. But you got to go to these places and you got to look them in the eye and you got to understand their story and what they've gone through. And I think that's why Fetterman did so well, yeah. You know, and I mean, you can speak a lot better to that than I can. That's your state. But, you know, he also looks like the guy that's at the end of the bar that'll have a beer with you, you know, and talk about this stuff and everything else. And, you know, he's not the normal politician.
Yeah, no, I loved some of the emails I got after the November election. Of, you know, there was one group that said, we found that you know actually being part of the community and talking to local issues and having local candidates really matters. And I'm just going, really? You wrote that down? What?
That's how out of touch we are. Like, I mean, that's, you know, like I can't tell you how many times that, you know, I've had conversations and stuff, and it's like we have to show up and have conversations online,
yep.
You know, and it's like, what do you mean show up and have conversations online? Anything that can go wrong. You're live and all the comments and, you know, it's the same thing as a town hall, you know, you're just doing a town hall online. Like, you got to do it. You got to talk to people and you got to explain yourself. And honestly, people don't even want you to agree with them, you know, all the time. They just want you to fight with them so that they know they're being heard, you know, like that. I can't tell you how many candidates I've worked with that have showed up and had really hard conversations and big disagreements with people behind the scenes and, you know, like on Zooms and that kind of stuff. And they got more support out of it.
Yeah.
Because everybody was like, yeah, go ahead.
No, and this is important because, you know, and I was just having this conversation with someone who said, you know, he gave me a backhanded compliment. He goes, what I like about you is we can argue and we can disagree. And at the end of it, we'll slap back, shake hands and still bust each other's shoes. And I go, that's what being part of the working class is. We can disagree. We can bust each other's shoes. We can you know, go back and forth. And at the end of the day, we both know we got a job to do. We got families to support. We're still on the same path. We may disagree, but we don't have to hate each other. And this is where, sadly, our politics has put us in a position where if you disagree with me, I have to hate you. And I've never felt that way.
Same here, but it's also a cultural thing too, right? So, you know, you and I are saying this right now, and I guarantee that there's people out there listening saying, well, I'm not, you know, knocking back a beer with anybody who's racist. And that's not what we're saying. You know, like there's disagreements on policy, there's disagreements on politics, but then there's Proud Boys and there's anti-Semitism and all of this stuff. But like the, you know, the social media and Twitter, it's there's no nuance,
yep.
You know, or any, you know, it's either all or nothing, you know, on that. But, you know, the thing is you can still have, like, when I was in Oklahoma, you know, and I was helping on that race, I never thought in a million years I'd be sitting down with people who are MAGA and worked in the MAGA White House. I mean, you remember the first tweet I ever had out, you know, and like going after this stuff, but like, you know, they're on the side of democracy now. They're fighting for, you know, the country and doing that
Joe
stuff.
Walsh.
I never thought. Yeah, Joe Walsh. Me and him had the biggest argument, you know, about that stuff in the beginning. I mean, there was a nasty fight that, you know, we went through. Or, you know, you have Olivia Troy. Or, you know, I mean, a lot of these, you know, people out there. And, I mean, I never thought in a million years that I'd be sitting down having conversations and planning how to save democracy with them.
Yep.
You know.
No, I'm with you. Yeah. So last question I got for you. You know, obviously 2024 is down the road a bit, but, you know, closing in. We hopeful that going to get it. We hopeful that where are we?
We're nowhere right now.
Okay.
We got to get our work. We have to get our work done. We haven't even begun.
We haven't even started
building out anything. There's no campaign infrastructures yet. You know, we're 3 months behind already. Really, we're a couple years behind. But, you know, we have to get going.
Yep. And work to do.
Yep, it's going to be tough.
Good stuff. David, I appreciate the time and the thoughts.
Thanks, Rick. Love being on. Tell Carol hi.
Good stuff. David Yankovich, senior Democratic strategist. Want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Quick break. Right back. I'm I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave a speech that would become one of the defining moments of his presidency. The world was embroiled in the Second World War. Debates raged about whether the United States should enter the conflict. At this critical time, Roosevelt delivered his State of the Union address. It became known as the Four Freedoms Speech. In it, President Roosevelt proposed four fundamental freedoms that should be shared by everyone in the world. They included the freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and the freedom from fear. Freedom of speech and freedom of worship had long been enshrined in the United States Constitution. But by declaring that people deserved freedom from want and fear, Roosevelt was charting new ground. It was this belief that undergirded his New Deal policies aimed at helping those devastated by the Great Depression. In his speech, Roosevelt declared that there were basic expectations by the people of the United States. They included jobs for those who can work, security for those who need it, the ending of special privilege for the few, the preservation of civil liberties for all, the enjoyment of the fruits of scientific progress in a wider and constantly rising standard of living. He then called for an increase in pensions, unemployment insurance, and access to medical care and jobs. In 1943, after the United States had entered the war, the Saturday Evening Post published a series of paintings by Norman Rockwell portraying each of the four freedoms outlined in the speech. The paintings by the popular artist helped to spread the idea of the freedoms to the American public. It's worth asking how far we've come in realizing these four freedoms today. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I gotta tell you, I love this. There is the first entrant into the 2024 presidential election. John Bolton. The mustachioed Bolton. John Bolton has announced he is running for president. Do you know where he did it? In the most advantageous place for an American to run for president, on Good Morning Britain. Yeah, he did it in a 2.5 minute clip on Good Morning Britain. Ran early this morning. Said we need a much more muscular, much stronger foreign policy. Said that Trump's the dumbest person he's ever worked with. I agree with that. I'm looking at this and going, weird. Now, what's interesting is I'm trying to think, who would vote for a John Bolton, a former ambassador under George W. Bush, former national security advisor under Trump, fired via Twitter. Remember that? That was fun. But Bolton's a guy who... I guess if you're a Republican who hates Trump, who loves blowing things up, and doesn't think DeSantis has a big enough goofy-looking mustache, I guess you could vote for Bolton. Other than that, I don't know who else is voting for John Bolton. But he said something in his 2.5 minute clip found very interesting. He said that, because you have to understand, Bolton's a warmonger. Bolton has yet to find a country he doesn't want to blow up. He talked about a reset with Russia and China, and not in a good way. He said, quote, "Unprovoked attacks against your neighbor is not something the U.S. and its allies will tolerate." So I got to wonder how many people are out there, loving the idea of sending troops into Ukraine or into Taiwan, for that matter. Just kind of throwing that out there, which kind of makes you wonder, maybe this is why he announced his run for president on Good Morning Britain. Now, the argument is this is a stunt. He needs to sell more books because he doesn't have a job. And maybe book sales will go up after calling Trump the dumbest person he's ever worked with. Who knows? I got a copy of his book, but they sent it to me for free. I don't think I would have bought it. But good for him. He's going to run for president. We'll see what his platform looks like other than bombing stuff. Would you vote for my Republican friends? Would you vote for John Bolton? Would you vote for the mustachioed guy? The guy who said we could blow the top 10 floors off the United Nations and no one would notice? Would you be in favor of that guy running the country? Huh. Interesting. Especially at a time when Republicans in the House are saying, hey, we need to cut defense spending. I honestly thought I'd never hear that. Never thought I'd hear it. Quick break. Right back.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.